find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
What's up, guys? This is Dryden from Alien Ant Farm, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. I hope you are doing well. Mike, is Georgia overrun with COVID again?
You're
spiking like your neighbors.
Cause any problems?
Floridian neighbors.
Florida?
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't know what they're doing down there. But I just saw recently you guys. Second you tried to open up some indoor restaurants, they're like, oh, let me overrun this place. Why don't we?
Yeah, just today he put the kibosh on indoor restaurants being open. So, and I don't know if, I didn't really read too much, but I don't know if there was just the visual of being overrun or there was actually any kind of spike in cases or whatnot, but it looks like we're never getting out of this, Berlo. We're never getting out of this ever again. This is our new lives here.
Yeah, I think there's like an American, like I think the U.S. Virgin Islands have no cases, so maybe we can all just move there. You know, I feel our podcast numbers would virtually go up if we moved there, and that's one of the key demographics in my lifetime to shout out my. Virgin Islanders, you know?
Right. So, yeah, I don't understand what they expect to happen, though, when you're open. Like, they're upset that parks were filled to capacity. I mean, people are locked up, and it's one of the few things they can actually do is go to parks and go for hikes and walks and whatnot. So I don't really know why the surprise of them being overrun was necessarily a bad thing.
I guess everybody's sitting back saying, well, we're opening up, but clearly, you know, wear your mask, give people some space. If you see it too crowded, maybe instead of going in, maybe you say another time or set an appointment.
Oh, man.
Nah, we're just contingent on just being the big ball of fire that the world just points and laughs at.
The people upset over the masks at this point, it's just like, come on, no one wants to wear them. We get it. You're so independent. You're such a free thinker, and your freedom is so. But just put it on when you go in the store. How hard is that? We're never gonna get out of this, and even if it helps a little bit, it's worth it. Like, enough already.
My oxygen level, Scott. I'm a scientist. I know what masks do.
Like, just put the stupid thing on. Yeah, here's what happens. You wear them, and then eventually you won't have to. But, you know, if they're saying, you know, whatever, if they're saying it helps, then it'll help us get the hell out of this ridiculous thing. It's getting to a point where we're going to have a civil war soon, I think. I think it's happening.
I look forward to when they're like, okay, you don't have to wear masks because we have a vaccine, and then the anti-vaxxers come out.
Ah, bring
and
them
then
in.
We're going to start with that. And then they'll have to come up with something else. It's like, all right, we got this big bubble, and then people are like, why not a sphere?
Yeah, and then the flat earthers will arrive.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, it's the flat earth. You know that scene from Anchorman where all the different gangs show up? Like, that's what it's going to be like. Ah, the anti-vaxxers are here. Oh, here come the flat earthers. the furries, what are you guys doing?
We wear masks and we want some extra credit for this. All right?
We've been wearing masks forever.
We wear our masks for other reasons, but we want at least some props. Give me a furry hug now.
It's getting so... I can't deal with the toxicity of people, man. Like, just reading people's status, there's just so much anger and people just boiling. It's a scary time, man. I'm scared to have a kid during this thing, man. People are nuts.
Well, is it too late to back out of this?
No, I think it's too late.
Yeah, things coming along and stuff. There's no reversal.
No.
You can't have the kid move out yet.
No, he can't. He can't afford it. He can't quite afford it.
Oh,
but it's like people just don't love each other, man. They just hate everyone, and everything's I don't understand how everything can be politicized. It's just insane. I could be like, I invented a new tape dispenser here, and somehow it would be a story. Well, there'd be sides to it. You know, it's like everything, the disease, the pandemic, the Black Lives Matter, the statues, the Bubba Watson thing,
Watson is the golfer. Yeah. I had to correct somebody else on Facebook on that one.
Yeah. Bubba Watson is he always wears these awful hats when he golfs. That's what I know about him. But everything is politicized. Like, the reaction and the immediate reaction is so much, the people don't care about the actual, like, research of anything or finding out the truth about it. It's all about the instant reaction. All about the instant reaction. If I can get upset or blame someone or accuse someone or cancel someone before even hearing the side or going through any kind of debate or anything, it's just they love the instant reaction. It doesn't matter anymore.
We just basically live in a world where everybody has to be 100% right.
Yep.
And if you're wrong, it's like, well, you don't understand. And then there's a conspiracy of why it's wrong.
Right.
So it's just never going to end. It's not, nobody sits back and goes, you know what, I thought about this, and I turn around and say to myself, you know what, I was wrong. I apologize.
We need like one of those like thoughts. EMP things to go out, like a big magnetic pulse, and just crush the internet and destroy all computers. And then I think we'd be able to maybe restart and get along again. I really don't know. And I try to tell people, being right all the time is not fun. I mean, look at me. I'm always right. I've never been wrong. It's like,
never.
It gets exhausting, honestly.
I'm thinking about moving to that Green Bank Observatory we talked about once. Mm-hmm. We talked with them. They had no internet access for like 12 miles. That's got to be the most peaceful place on earth. Maybe there's got to be workers that just sit there and go, life is good.
Well, that's cool.
I have no complaints about people.
Because me and the wife, we're gonna be like the island people that we talk to. We're gonna go live with them on their own floating island and just go off the grid. Hmm. So, podcasting's gonna be a little bit harder to do, but you know, you won't have to deal with anybody.
And then when we need a vacation, we'll go with Sailing Totem, and we'll just be out in the middle of the ocean for like 9 years.
Yeah, those were all guests on our show, guys. If you want to go look back, but anyway, before as we drag you down, the Corona Blues are, like I said the other week, are definitely like a thing at this point. But anyway, guys, welcome to the show. This here is Verbal Shenanigans. We've been around for six years, I think, doing this podcast, and you're basically tuned into like a radio style show. We like to talk about life, and then we always break up our boring lives with somebody's life who's very exciting. We always bring on interesting guests. Last week was fantastic. We had Luke Akins on the last episode, who he was a skydiver that dove without a parachute. He's also Red Bull. I don't know. I guess you would call him a Red Bull skydiver. Aerial photographer, blah, blah, blah. He's really cool. I still got to post some videos from that interview. And then a couple days before that, we had Skinny Pete on from Breaking Bad, Charles Baker. So it was a really cool week last week. And this week is no different. We got two really awesome guests for you. So welcome to the show. I hope you guys are all well and you're not, house isn't being rioted or you haven't been crushed by a statue or you haven't shot somebody. I hope everything's okay. Hope you're not sick.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well, I mean, summer now, Scott. I mean, you know, living in the EZ should be better now.
Right. I mean, summer kills everything, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm guessing you have tons of summer plans during all this, right?
Loads. I think, yeah. Another reason I have the blues here, my annual vacation with like 40 of our family members canceled. Too many people worried about everyone living in one house. And so everything's just basically canceled. I basically exist to work on my lawn. And that's essentially my life now. So,
are you saying New York still frowns upon large gatherings for some reason?
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's just disappointing.
What I would like you to do, since you can't have the full family gathering, is to find an old school horn and just go to your aunt's house and do Ding Dong Dash. And when she comes out, honk the horn in behind her.
That's what you want me to do. That's how I should spend my time for the next couple weeks.
Yes, I'm giving you an assignment for the podcast. It's due in the next week. I'm gonna be checking your work too. You better have a tape for me.
I'm
very specific about things.
Last night I was watching this documentary on Netflix. It was the series was called like Home Game or something like that. So, but it was all about like niche sports in different countries and whatnot. And there was a sport went by the name of Calcio Storico. It was played in Florence, Italy. Okay. Now, the game is 27 guys versus 27 guys. Okay. There's four teams in the whole in Florence. There's the red, the white, the blue, and maybe the green, something like that. And it's like soccer, rugby, and then MMA in one sport. Okay.
Ooh.
You need to check this out. So basically, it's been going on since the days of like gladiator fights. And the object is for your team to get the ball, okay, across the court into the goal, which sounds easy enough. Okay. But I guess the best way to describe this is you have two teams. Picture two offensive lines, right? And then you have a couple guys who are in charge of moving the ball behind them. However, picture those offensive linemen MMA fighting each other in the middle of the field.
Hmm.
Yeah. So basically two guys would be punching and kicking each other and grappling in the middle of the field in order to pin their opponent to the ground. Now, once you're on the ground, okay, once you're on the ground, you can't get up you can't get up until there's like a goal scored or something like that. So basically you have the middle of the field guys just fighting each other, kicking each other, punching each other in the head as the rest of them toss a rugby ball and try to get into the goal.
All right. So is there the same rules? It's like no groin punches, no gouging in the eyes, or are they just full-out hooligans?
It's like war, basically. But essentially, like if you get on the ground, they have to – I think they just stay on the ground until the ball changes back possession or something like that. But it just looks like – it looks like guys playing rugby, and then in the middle of the field, there's just people having, like, fist fights. It's pretty – and, like, they play once a year. There's four teams, so they have one semifinal and one final, and that's it.
I was hoping you were going to tell me it was like baseball, and they have a 162-game season.
Yeah. But it's pretty awesome, man. Like, it's been going on for, like, hundreds of years, and the guys, like, they don't really get paid. And would you care to guess what they win if they win the cup, or I should say the championship? What do you think the team wins?
As weird as this sport sounds, I'm guessing something like a head of cheese or like a gallon of goat's milk.
Okay, not too far. They win a cow. They win.
Okay.
They win a white cow. And apparently back in the day, they would take that cow and kill it and victoriously eat the cow. Now, essentially, the cow is just like a trophy. So when your team parades through the street, they have the cow with them.
Mm-hmm. That's got to be suck for that cow that last year. It's like, oh, sorry, Bessie, but, you know, the new rules go into effect in 2021, so.
Yeah. I mean, it was, the sport is insane. It's, like I said, it's just dudes kicking, punching each other, squaring off in the middle of the field, and then, like, guys behind them throwing balls and trying to advance to the goal side of the thing. It does look like a lot of fun to watch. I wonder if it'll catch on.
Now, is the trophy like the Stanley Cup where every player has a day with the cow?
I guess it really could be, considering there's so many guys on the team and they only play once a year.
I mean, that'd be pretty unfair if, like we're all on the same team and it's like the cow's going to be at Scott's house. And I'm like, so I got to go out of my way to Scott's house to see the trophy that I want, is what you're telling me. You're telling me I don't get a day with the cow.
Here's the thing, though. I wouldn't trust everyone with a cow to take care of a cow. Like, a Stanley Cup is like an inanimate object. Like, you wouldn't trust a bunch of dumb athletes to, like, feed the cow and make sure the cow's got water. And, you know, I don't know if they drink off the cow.
Well, they got to do it like the Stanley Cup. You got a handler that's going to be there all the time to make sure the cow's in good condition every year.
Oh,
I see. The last thing... Like, the last thing, like, let's say I'm the yellow team. It's like, oh, after an 8-year drought, we finally won the stupid game. And then we're like, wait a minute. Why is our cow, like, have, like, various diseases and have a broken leg?
Oh, I see what you want. Like the Stanley Cup. So you want every player to engrave themselves on the cow is what you want.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I want, like, what do you call it? With the hot iron branding.
Okay.
I want all players to be branded on this cow.
I don't know if PETA's gonna like that one, Berlo. I don't know if
Listen, PETA's not going out there getting in a fist fight in a soccer game to win the coveted cow.
I don't know.
They're all sitting there complaining about the cow's thoughts. Meanwhile, I'm getting my ass kicked trying to score goals in a sport I don't even know what the hell it is.
I don't know, because considering these PETA people, you've seen them, like, pretend they're dead packages of meat in the streets of New York City. I don't know. I feel like they might travel to Florence, Italy, and save the cow that you decided needed to be branded with every name of player.
Scott.
So we're talking 27 names on that cow in just 1 year.
Now, hold up. I'm living in Georgia, so... I don't even have proper facilities for my sport. So, you know, I am a true bastion of this sport. I got to go out and find people. I got to, like, sneak up on them and punch them in the face and then run down the other side of the field with a rugby ball just to train so I can go over to Europe and defend my title. I deserve my name on that cow.
Now, I watched the second episode. This might be more up your alley, Berlo. It was wrestling in Cameroon, I believe. But it was called...
That was my favorite 90s band, by the way, wrestling in Cameroon. So, they had some great ska music.
But here's the thing. Oh, in the Congo. Sorry, in the Congo. So it's like wrestling, but it's called... I'm going to butcher the word. It's called catch fetiche. Okay.
Okay.
You know, any guesses what the twist on their wrestling might be?
Nude.
Not nude. Not you.
Then why do I even want to bother?
I mean, I know I said it's up your alley, but different alley. Oh, I meant the wrestling alley. Fetiche apparently is a word for voodoo or black magic. Ooh. Okay. So what they have to do. Voodoo is incorporated into the wrestling matches. Okay. So, for instance, like, me and you would be wrestling, right? And then I might cast a spell on you midway through our match where you freeze or something like that. And I, like, rip out your intestines or something and then unfreeze you. And you go, and then I pin you. One of them put someone into a fake casket and then covered them with a blanket and they pulled out a goat. They turned their opponent into a goat. Now, picture thousands, hundreds and thousands of fellow Congolese, I believe that's what it is. Everybody's kind of surrounded the ring and just going crazy, and there's like local heroes, but all the matches have to involve some kind of magic to them. Are you into that?
There's an obvious Papa Shango joke that I want to throw in here, but I'm not sure culturally how that works. So I'm going to just say spiritually I said that joke. Like, do they get like big arenas for this?
Or No. This is a ring, like, you know, basically that has some exercise mats on it, and people are hanging out on the back of cars, and it's a wild scene.
So basically, it's like your backyard wrestling days.
Yes, but this is in the middle of the Congo with hundreds and hundreds of people.
I thought that's where you guys went.
No. I didn't make it that far. I didn't make it to that circuit. I only did the park across the street. I'm trying to think of some of the other magic that they use. I think one person, he was a twin, and his brother stands outside of the ring. He doesn't wrestle, but he just looks at you and casts spells on you as he wrestles. So the one guy definitely got the better end of the deal. One guy's sacrificing his body. One guy just stands there.
So he's like the Jim Cornette of this fishing, wrestling fish.
Did you see that? Did you see how all the wrestlers are getting like Me Too'd, basically? There's like a whole movement going on with all these wrestlers getting, I forget what their hashtag was.
Speaking out is the hashtag right now. Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
No, I mean, a sport that's basically been driven by manhood. If you kind of add to it, like, debatably, like, the biggest name of women's wrestling, the Fabulous Moolah, was basically questioned if she was, like, prostituting women out and stealing their money and so forth. So women's wrestling doesn't have that great background you want to, you know, hang your tag on.
Plus, it's a sport that is, some testosterone-filled guys, steroid guys, tons of drug abuse, tons of alcohol, lots of gambling, things like that. Also, a lot of times, not the brightest of gentlemen have entered that sport. So this could come of no surprise that there's some Me Too-ing going on in the wrestling community. I mean, I bet you half the guys that are dead are probably whew, we escaped that one.
Well, Snuka, I mean, he basically was the originator of that.
And, I mean, Jim Cornette got brought up, right? I think Jim Cornette.
I think his name got brought up. Yeah.
Anybody that carries around that weird paddle thing,
there's some tennis racket.
there's some red flags going up there right away. You know, like a little strange. What's he use that paddle for?
Well, managing, of course.
I never understood that. Why do you have a paddle?
I guess it's like, oh, he's a rich guy, so they go out and play tennis a lot. But and obviously, like, everybody's shocked. Oh my God, he used the racket on Macho Man Randy Savage. I never saw that coming.
The worst guy is that Brother Love, the red face guy. Is that his name?
Brother Love is the red face guy.
That was the worst gimmick of all. Let's just make your face really red and you yell a lot. Like, that was horrendously bad.
Yep, and now he's the head writer for WWE.
Really? Who was it? What was his
name?
Hand
to God, Jim Pritchard is his name. He basically took over for Paul Heyman for WWE. So, and everybody's saying it's because he's a yes man to McMahon. So he's just going to do everything the 78-year-old who clearly knows today's audiences know what they want.
Vince McMahon, man. He can't wait till all the accusations come out about him. There's no way he doesn't have billions of skeletons under that closet.
Oh, my Lord. I mean, just on the stuff he does on camera alone, you know, it's like, what does he do where he says, man, I don't want anybody seeing this?
Yeah, he's got creep vibes for years. So, I mean, would not surprise me if his name gets thrown in. It's funny how the whole like Me Too and calling people out and cancel culture, like, just seems to go in waves, doesn't it? It seems like as soon as we think that's kind of dying down, all of a sudden just whoosh, comes rising back up. Comics, you got Chris D'Elia, you got who else was just named? Chris D'Elia, someone else. Oh, Jeff Ross just got in a bunch of trouble. Some girl accusing him of dating her since she was 16 or something like that. So, I don't know, man. It's just the culture we live in. But again, it's like just getting accused is like career threatening, you know? And some, all of it could be not true. And we don't even give people like a chance. That's the scary part about today.
Well, I think it really depends on the person. And it's a weird thing I kind of brought up. I am, you know, all for the movements and, you know, pushing to get truths and stuff like that. I think I brought this up before. Like, I remember there was a small time, there was a story that came out of George Takei, right, where a guy said, you know, he passed out after a party and he alleges that George Takei was unbuckling his pants to try to just have its way with him. And I remember when it came out, it's like George Takei came out and said, no, it's not true. Went away.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, if it's not true, I have no problems with it. But at the same time, it's like it, let's say somebody says that story about Donald Trump.
Yep.
That's going to be that's the number one story on every news network. We're going to be talking about it for months and months and months and months and months and months. And this was like in the middle when George was kind of big on the whole, you know, he had that whole internet phase where he's like putting puns out and memes and stuff. Like, he was like really popular. And it just, I always felt it weird how quick it was. It's kind of like the blackface thing, what we talked about before, where it's like Howard Stern did it, Jimmy Kimmel did it, stuff like that. It's like,
it's funny though how
Jimmy Fallon.
It's funny how it's selective though, right? Like some people go down forever and others just are able to just be bulletproof. Like Donald Trump is bulletproof. This guy's got accused of everything, and he's just like, ah. It's almost like he's so crazy that he's invincible. Like, his tweets, he could tweet anything in the world and say stupid things. He just says so much of it that you can't pin him for any one thing. Like today, he retweeted a video where some guy's yelling white power in it. It's like, the president tweeted that out. Like, and that'll just blow over like everything else does with him. It's unbelievable, but I don't know, man.
I mean, not even to like dwell on Trump and all, like even like our past couple of presidents and all, it's like you sit back and say, like, if we had like this kind of media back then, would like we be talking like decades later about Ulysses S. Grant,
Taft was a creep.
It just went from, oh, that's such an honored position and we're treasured, to you dirty son of a...
Oh, man. I think it just goes to show you that we have to this'll be the last thing before we get to our guest here. We have to, as like a society, like start to admitting that you can do something. Like, everybody is flawed and has made mistakes and that people can change. Because, like, you could dig up anybody. Like, you could just figure anything out or any person and find something and be like, oh, you know, and attack them over. Like, you have to let people, like, change with the times and grow and understand that. Like, what was funny 30 years ago isn't funny now. There's a reason that you put on a lot of comedies, for example, and they don't hold up at all. Because even just sense of humor's changed. Like, I don't think a lot of those older movies, like, I was watching Caddyshack the other day, and I was like, you know, it's still got its moments, but I wasn't like, oh my God, this is hilarious. Like, I thought it was hilarious back in the day. Like, things just change, you know?
Well, I mean, there's hilarious movies in the past, but who knows if we're allowed to see anymore, like Blazing Saddles.
Right.
That's probably still one of the most hilarious movies of all time, but...
Yep.
Lord, they went into the race angle in every single way, in every single form.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's just you have to allow people to evolve. And as long as they're on a positive path, you know, like it's... I mean, I'm not talking about the people with, like, the sexual assault and things like that. That's a whole other different ballgame. But, like, humor, things that were attempted as jokes or attempted to be funny or attempted as entertainment. You know, I also love these people like raging against somebody like from movies they made years ago. Like, how come none of you spoke up or made a big deal about it 10 years ago? You just join on to the angry mob and be like, oh, how could someone do that? Like, let's use Jimmy Fallon. Like, was anybody mad when he did that? What was that, 10, 15 years ago, something like that? Was anybody mad back then?
Anybody? I just saw an article where they, like, Hulu dropped some episodes of shows, and one of them was the Golden Girls for blackface.
Great. Yep. Where was the where was the outrage back then? You know, like, was there any outrage? Was there some? Was there some group of people at least making a stand? Because I got to call, like, BS on a lot of people who probably really much enjoyed that episode of the Golden Girls, you know? It's just...
No, that was your favorite, I believe you told me.
Yeah. I was like, I love that blackface episode. but it's just like with everything, right? There's the two sides that are just out of control, and then there's always, like, the normal people down the middle who get it and move on. But unfortunately, it's just like the... The crazy people get the attention, man. The people who make stinks, the people who don't shut up about things, the people who go nuts, they control everything. They control the news, they control, you know. It's unfortunate, but what is
That's
fortunate...
That's why I will not stop demanding to put my name on that cow. I will not stop.
Right, so like one day we're going to get canceled, and they're going to be like, oh my God, listen to what Mike said about the cow, right? And then we're going to be done. Right.
At least my name will be on the cow. That's the only thing that matters. That
we could use.
I live for one reason, and it's for my name on a cow.
We could use the publicity. So hopefully, someone does try to cancel us. Anyway, so we got a really cool guest today. You might know their band from, I guess, the late '90s, early 2000s. You might know them for their very famous cover of "Smooth Criminal." They had a pretty big presence for a couple years. They're still making music. They're still together. They're still putting out new content. And we have the lead singer from that band, Alien Ant Farm, the lead singer, Dryden Mitchell, joining us on the show today. And very excited to talk to him. So let's give Dryden a call. So Dryden, first off, I want to thank you for giving us a few minutes here. We appreciate the time.
For sure, man.
Are we calling you in? Are you in California right now?
Yeah, I'm in Cali. I'm in Riverside, California. I just bought a house out here in October. Spent about 17 years in Huntington Beach, and which I loved dearly. Had a nice little studio out there, and just found a way to the house just gained so much equity, and I was just like, thinking about getting into a place that I could actually just buy. And so it was really kind of a cool moment for my wife and I to like literally not have a mortgage anymore. Is incredible.
Yeah, I would like that. If you want to switch places with me, that would be fantastic. But
yeah, all right, Berlew and Dryden podcast. I love it, Scott. Let's do it.
Yeah. So what is we've been asking every guest during this last 3 months. So what is where you're living at? Are you guys seeing light at the end of the tunnel with the pandemic and actually being able to leave the house? Or are you guys still pretty locked up?
We've been. I don't know. It's weird. It's weird how people just kind of. It seemed like when the news as of late has changed, so like everyone's kind of forgotten about what.
It's not in the daily news.
It's sad because you know obviously both things are just like, you know, terrible. But I just feel like I'm fortunate enough to where I found a little bit of work. We should be on tour right now, and I'm just kind of going stir crazy. I found a little bit of work with a friend of actually like a fan of the band, but has become a friend. Hit me up on social media like, hey, he owns like a really great tattoo ink company, and it's just like warehouse. He basically mixes and sterilizes his own ink. It's not a tattoo shop or anything, and there's only about 8 employees in there, so it's nice to just go in there and free my head up and make a little bit of money while this is all going on. And I really don't have to be around
You know, it's not like a public store or anything. So I'm literally around, you know, seven people a day. And it's kind of nice to get some work and not be, you know, around hundreds of people.
For sure. Yeah.
Now, when he bosses you around, does he have the right to demand you to sing a song of his since he's such a fan of yours and now he's your boss? Is that how it works?
Well, kind of, but it is really funny. Like going to meet him, I was like, how is this going to, I don't know. It just seemed kind of odd. And he just said, oh man, like what a huge fan he was. But yeah, we kind of joked about it too. You know, he's such a, his family's such cool people though, man. It's really funny to see kind of like, I'm going in there to get like, you know, $17 an hour job. And he's like fanboying on his high school days or whatever. And
yeah.
I'm cool with it. I don't give a shit, but it's been cool.
And I think this whole thing brings a lot of, you know, a lot of humble and, you know, perspective to a lot of people because I know personally, like, comedy is, it feels like it's just dead. Like, a little Facebook memory popped up yesterday and it was 3 months since my last show and I was like, oh man, that's like, it feels like it's 100 years ago.
Yeah, and comedy is my favorite form of, you know, I guess, art. Like present art, being there like in a club or something, and, mm-hmm. and it's been a while since I've had that opportunity to go and see some live comedy too. I'm kind of itching for it big time.
Yeah.
Now I've seen in a lot of interviews that you talked about like your love for music kind of stemmed from like your dad being like a singer songwriter and like being at parties just like, you know, grabbing the people in the party, if you will. Out of curiosity, like, was your dad have the same style of music that you like, or was he like something off base, but you just loved like the moment?
Yeah, no, I was really kind of, we differ a bit on, you know, he's kind of Americana. Now I love certain things like kind of in that Lyle Lovett vein where it's, straddles that country music, which I really don't, not a big fan of country music, but I'm a huge fan of just great songs. And there's obviously great songs in country music. I have to dig a little harder to find them.
Yeah.
Because it's just that genre that kind of gives me I don't know. I just kind of bum on it more than I thrive on it. But, that's where my dad's world's from. And, yeah, so I just like, in that regard, I can always find the silver lining in certain things like that, where if I'm not vibing on my dad's jams, I can definitely vibe on his lyrics because it's just great, great, great poetry in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Can you, would you ever fathom that your band is, you know, going on its what, third decade together? You know, you're still able to make music and still able to kind of use the same, name, if you will, like, you know, 30 years, you know.
Yeah, it's very odd. Like, you know, I think I was thinking of the other day. Well, it's funny in a sense, today's my birthday and
happy birthday.
Thank you. And you know, what's weird is I'm 44 now, dude. And on my 20th birthday on June 15th, on my 20th birthday was Alien Ant Farm's very first show. So in a sense, it's like Ant Farm's birthday today too. So
right.
It's kind of trippy to. Wow. I was just like 2 days ago thinking about like, fuck, man, how did this happen? I feel like I'm 24 still, and I'm now 44, and it's like I don't want this freaking. I don't want gray butthole hairs or whatever the hell's going on.
Well,
who does?
Yeah. I know, right? Yeah.
What would you
pining for?
Why do you think you guys have been able to kind of keep this together? And, you know, you guys do put out new music, and I know you put out something recently, but there's got to be something more than just, you know, just getting together and jamming being enough. Why do you think you've been able to keep this together this long?
I think we just enjoy our misery together, maybe. we've been brothers, man. It's so weird to see, like, we've traveled so much together, like any other band. It's not like an unusual story by any means, or just like any other friendship, you know, where I feel like at times through the music and stuff and through our, you know, our just
twisted little adventures that we've been fortunate enough to share together. I think that with whether it be, getting a Grammy nomination way back when, to just, you know, playing like huge events and going through sadistic events like bus crashes and stuff. I feel like those are the few dudes that I know that know how it is for me, and then good or bad. And I think it's fun to get into a room and have share something that no one else, at least, you know, like I said, every band is similar, but no one else has our experiences except, you know, the couple of us that do.
For sure. Yeah. It's a long time.
Yeah. Now, in your early days, did you guys like automatically just gel and have that sound that we know you guys from, or did it take you a while to kind of figure out what the band would be?
Yeah, we spent a little bit of time where the guys were we were an odd couple, I think, in the beginning. I was really into folk music and
really
and just the more mellow side of things, and you know, our drummer and guitar player were in this heavy band from out here called Brother Vibe that was really did quite well, and these dudes were very studied musicians as far as just learning their craft. I was more just, I don't know if you call it a troubadour or what. I just kind of like threw it on and went for it. And I did spend a lot of time, you know, learning how to write my own things. But I by any means, I was not studied at all. You know, I was just playing chords and keys, and I didn't know what I was doing. But, you know, I knew that it sounded good to me. And so jumping in with these dudes that could actually sight read and play jazz and all this stuff was very intimidating in the beginning. And then slowly through their acceptance of me and saying, yo, dude, you do have a really good thing. Though you don't know what the hell you're doing it well. And I felt like I got to be a part of this, like, exclusive club of theirs, you know, and getting to be accepted by these guys that really did know what they were doing.
Right.
Just made me, like, all the more excited to pursue it and just be better at writing.
How is your, speaking of writing, how has it changed? I mean, are you guys still like close locally, like as far as distance wise, or do you guys do like a lot of writing through the web or send in files or?
Yeah, that just, it has become that. Right. And I think we are closer locally. Like I said, I was in Huntington Beach for the past 17 years or so, which is, the guys are actually here in Riverside. So now that it's crazy now that we're local, I feel like I saw more when I was further away, but neither here nor there. We do start out with, you know, basically just, you know, a guitar riff, whether it's me or Terry doing it. And we just kind of launch from there and start strapping beats and rhythms onto it and sending these MP3s. And then boom, I'll just throw the MP3 into Pro Tools, throw my bit on, send it back. And then we have a lot of, you know, shit talking in between, who, you know, change this, don't change it. And then, you know, I've hopefully 10 emails later, we have something that is semi-cohesive that we can, at least whether we're going to work with a producer or just kind of have it there in the stockpile. You know, we just got signed to a record label called Megaforce, which is cool. And it's predominantly metal. But they have, you know, they have like Bjork, which is crazy to me, and anywhere from Anthrax. So I just feel like it's going to provide an interesting year for us, man. I'm excited to have, you know, we have about four songs mixed and mastered right now. And we got, you know, like I mentioned, that stockpile, we have dozens and dozens, but for this little chapter of our lives, I think we have about seven right now that are pretty close to introducing a producer to the mix, and or whether we could just go in and record them. I think everyone's a big boy now. We know how to what we like, but it's always good to have someone in the room that can kind of say, you know, someone that we respect that can kind of throw the reins on there and pull them and kind of guide us. You know, I don't think we need a ton of guidance, but I do like to have objectivity in them. Sometimes they're rooting for something I would say, maybe the other guys. We kind of bicker at each other because we do know each other so well, and it's kind of nice to have someone in that room that's like on your side, or maybe speaking for them trying to speak clarity to you. You know,
for sure,
absolutely. A couple weeks ago, we were lucky enough to talk with Dyson Knight of the Baja Men, and we chatted about him about like when Who Let the Dogs Out came out, and it was kind of interesting how he said like he would show up for a concert and say, "Ah, the Baja Men," and like just as they walk out, all everybody's shouting is, "Sing Who Let the Dogs Out? Who Let the Dogs Out?" It's like, you know, guy, you're not getting this at first. I'm wondering if you were kind of having the same experience when Smooth Criminal came out, because from what I understand, they released it with you guys not even knowing it yet, right?
Yeah, I've had like a love-hate relationship with that song, and I think more love than anything. There was a season there, maybe a couple years into the band, I think, maybe, or at least not a couple years into the band, but a couple years upon, like, once that song had kind of like reached its point, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, fortunately, like, yeah, I could see it when we play like certain, it depends, like a festival or something, we'd get more of that, but like with like shows, I think people that liked the band quickly kind of found out that we were a quote-unquote real band.
Yeah.
with songs. Mm-hmm. You know? So we'd experience that in a sense where if we're gonna go play like a radio, not even a radio show, I'm trying to think of an actual like festival where it would be like, you know, maybe these people would only know like Movies and Smooth Criminal. So it was just like, then you're, it's like an uphill battle in a sense where you're like, you can feel it that they're just like, all right, get through all this freaking crap so we can hear the one song or the two songs that we know. But,
yeah.
But I think I'm familiar with that, with what that guy was talking about. But I think we got a fair run. More than that, though, you know.
For sure. I mean, you take you guys definitely have. I know you were saying like, you know, you were into folk and your bandmates were into heavy stuff, and I think you guys have always kind of had a lot of different sounds going on. I mean, you take those first three singles, you know, Movies and you know, Smooth Criminal, but then like I thought the song Attitude was like the best song off that record, and I thought that had a completely different vibe to it. It almost reminded me of like a Glassjaw type vibe, like their slower stuff, and I really dug that. So I think like you're probably a band that people, once they hear, are like, oh wow, they do a whole lot of different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to scratch it and then it's there. It's definitely there, you know. And a lot of bands I think have fallen trapped to, you know, whatever you want to call a one hit wonder, whatever that means, because you know, in my head I feel like every song is great, but that's not the truth either, but yeah, you know, like that song to me, I felt when you mentioned Attitude, I was really ready. It just goes to show how right or wrong we can be, but I was like, you know, in my head, I was thinking, when this song gets released, it's over. I felt like we were going to be like Incubus status. You know, I really felt like Attitude was going to make this, was going to be like the biggest song of that year. And, you know, and it just wasn't in the cards. I don't know. We could sit here and say, oh, well, maybe it wasn't pushed properly. You know, maybe these, stations didn't add it because it wasn't that kind of like not one two knockout punch kind of song.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other bands had songs in that same regard. I don't know what works and what doesn't work, but I was gonna bet my house that thing was gonna take off. But you know, that's whatever it is, it is.
I'll tell you, it's still on like a lot of my playlists. So I dig that song a lot. I think it stands the test of time for sure.
That's cool.
You
now your next.
Go ahead, Mike.
When your next album came out, Truant, I remember you guys performed on top of a building in front of the BET Awards. Now, were you guys planning on getting arrested that day, or was it just more you figure everybody would love us and then they would just cheer for us and walk away?
No, it wasn't a love or cheer for us, and it came about really kind of in a funny way when we were sitting around we were sitting with the director that did that video. His name is Mark Klausfeld, and he did a Smooth Criminal video for us, and we just liked working with the guy. He had a sense of humor and whatever. We were just at that point, we were just comfortable like lip syncing in front of this dude, I guess what it comes down to. But
we talked about, I think I had mentioned, you remember the YouTube video? I think it's still haven't found what I'm looking for. I think they're in a building in like New York City on top of the building. And
yeah, with the U2, right?
Yeah. People are just digging them. They, once they find out, it's like, and I remember saying out loud, I said, what if we did a video like that, but everyone's like bummed, you know? And everyone kind of like started laughing and that thought, okay, that's kind of interesting. But do we really want to like bum some people out? And I was like, yeah, I would love to bum some people out. And so we thought about like what events. Literally, we had, I forget how much time, a month or two before we were leaving for like some other tour, and we just thought, okay, in the Southern California area, like what was going on at that time? What events were going on that we could ruin? I guess. And that sounds so aggressive and lame, but that's kind of where it came stemmed from. But because we did like a Justin Timberlake and Christina Aguilera concert like in the parking lot thing, and it just didn't work. It kind of fell flat. And then we actually had our own float in the gay pride parade in West Hollywood, and we were just blasting our music like way too loud. Like we kept getting like warnings and shit that. And so that was funny, but it just didn't transfer. If you look around on YouTube, you can find like the original These Days video, and it has all three, the BET Awards, the Justin Christina concert, and the Gay Pride Parade, all kind of edited together. And it was just a big mess. You couldn't really, in that 3-minute time period, you couldn't really tell what was going on, you know? And then, so we went back and just said, well, which one's the best one? And clearly, like, everyone was like, dude, the BET one's just ridiculous. So we went back and redid it and or added more of that footage. And, it was kind of nerve-wracking. I remember we had set up the night before, and, we knew what we're, you know, we knew that, we were going to ruin a live event. It was, you know, being broadcast on their channel. And we had basically locked all, it was the Jimmy Kimmel building, but we locked all the doors with deadbolts.
Really?
The cops had to get, well, that's what was truly like, I think everything would have been okay. But then when they had to get bolt cutters for like three doors to get to us, they were like, when they got up there, they were like, dude, everyone's going to fucking jail like right now. And surprisingly enough, like we staged it in that video. No one got arrested. Our I think one of the PAs there like kind of said it was their idea. So a couple people got like detained, but ended up not getting arrested. The pussies that we are, we literally just ran. I remember my guitar player and me were like at an In-N-Out Burger on freaking Santa Monica Boulevard, like in like just like sitting there looking at each other, like totally huffing, just going, did we just do that? Because it was, I hope like everything got recorded because it was awesome. And we literally like we thought, okay, when do we want to do it? And then we saw Snoop Dogg come up to get interviews. Like, well, there's not going to be a bigger artist than like, let's just do it right now. And we threw the PA on and went for it. We did it. We ran through the song, I think, like three or four times. So BET basically had to, like, they cut to commercial, and then for, like, 12, 13, 14 minutes of commercial and video, because it was just nonsense. It was just way too loud. And
so you were just going, just constantly going through it?
Yeah, I told my friends that night, like, hey, put it on BET tonight. And they're just like, why? And I'm like, just put it on. Just watch it tonight. Like, and then like, later on, and I'm like, dude, that was crazy. Because they only saw like 4 seconds of it, you know. And then later, obviously, you see the video. But I remember CEO, whatever, BET, called DreamWorks, called the head of DreamWorks, Mo and Michael Austin at the time. They're like, we're never going to play a DreamWorks artist on BET again. And I remember Michael Austin was like, good, we got a rad video. We don't give a crap. Like,
yeah. Cool. Yeah. Now, you had mentioned like, you know, you worked with someone who did, I always wonder this about bands with music videos, like, especially like you guys had a very successful music video where it's like, you know, there's some acting and some fun and like it, and you know, I don't know if it's just the camera, but you certainly seem like you have no problem kind of acting and being, you know, full of energy. Is it hard to bring like a whole band into like a music video setting, like where it's lip singing and kind of, you know, really selling everything? I always wondered that about bands.
Yeah, it's hard. I've seen other bands do it that are like kind of, because Terry, our guitar player, has had a bit, kind of a little bit of a film company. Like, not I would say film company, but he has shot some videos with some pretty decently larger profile bands. And through watching them, kind of that bands that wouldn't really want to play into it or not, I think that there's this vibe of like, you're too cool to do something or too.
Yeah.
A lot of rock bands want to perceive like they're the shit, and it's really silly. And I hate that. I love the vibe of those mysterious darker bands, but I don't like the attitude that some of those mysterious cool bands carry. So yeah, we always wanted to be, I guess, palatable to more people. I think those like movies and Smooth Criminal, especially those videos, are just so catered. I remember saying, I want my mom to dig this, and I want like little kids to dig this.
Yeah.
That's just important, you know? And I feel like even now when I see videos on YouTube of where they'll be showing like a 2-year-old watching like the movies or Smooth Criminal video, and they're just all like giddy and giggly, and I'm like, dude, that's so awesome to me, you know?
For sure. I always picture like the guys in my old garage bands, you know, as a kid. Like I can't picture them like doing some of the stuff you guys. I imagine it would be like two of us being like really into it, and the other three being like, oh, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, we've gotten some of those battles where like, you know, where I remember it just like, you know, one band member's like, I don't like, this is stupid, you know, like I'm not gonna fucking play with the monkey, you know, and I'm like, dude, that's gonna be fucking funny and cool, like that's gonna be the best part of the video, you know.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of that, like throwing yourself out there, and I guess it's everyone's judgment is how lame you want to be. I think as lame as you can be ultimately works the best.
For sure.
And I just love the part how you guys went back to Michael Jackson, and he's like, well, have the kid take off the mask, and then you paid for all that stuff to reshoot everything. And then he's like, I was better with him having the mask on.
Yeah, that was weird. I don't know if he was just messing with us, but because obviously, you know, he wore that mask for like his failed surgeries. And so I don't think we intentionally meant to like, bumming him out with a mask, but that's basically everything we saw for a couple years there was him wearing one. So it definitely was his style, you know? And, exactly. So yeah, I think we never even got to talk to the dude and out of just emails back and forth with like his people and our people, whatever that means. But he definitely loved the song and then ended up ultimately liking the video too.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
Tell us about the new Wham cover. I know you guys just put out Everything She Wants. Is this just something for the fans, like a little, or is this like part of something you guys have been recording, like a bigger album? What's the goal with this?
I don't really know what the goal was, or I mean, that's maybe not a good plan to not know what you're doing, but it was, like I said, we had done like 4 songs completed, and we knew again we were like, well, I personally was like, I want to do another cover. I know that we have gotten, you know, maybe stigma, or I think more positive than negative, obviously, for us doing that, the cover that we did, Smooth Criminal. But like, there's also been like, you know, I can't help but read, you know, just like, oh my god, these guys freaking, they don't even have one song of their own, they blew up off a fucking dumb cover song. So there's that kind of floating in the air. That just made me want to do it like more and better, you know? And like, dude, this, you're crazy. Like the people that have said that, I just made me want to like do 10 covers.
Double,
you know?
Down.
So
yeah, yeah.
We've even talked about doing like an EP of just covers, maybe just female singers, or I don't know. But
I feel like you would appreciate that. If you ever heard Steven Seagal's, if not, you need to look them up after this interview. They're like this.
No, I'll when we hang up, I'll write it down right now.
They're this band from Finland, and they do like bluegrass covers of like all these songs, and it is so rad.
Sick.
Thunderstruck and all these songs. You should totally.
Oh, you know what?
They're so good.
I've actually heard it. There's a video of them like out. They're kind of like
Oh yeah, they wear like overalls.
I've seen it. That is pretty dope. Dude, I like it.
They're so good. You got to look up their cover of The Trooper by Iron Maiden, by the way.
I'll check it out when we get off the phone.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I feel like you would appreciate
it. No, not at all. As far as what the goal was for it, I remember just a couple months back when we finally cinched up this deal with Megaforce, this woman named Missy who runs the label, she heard the songs, the four that's basically what got us the deal was the songs, and then along came the Wham song, and she's like, I love your guys' original songs that you gave me, and we're gonna make a kick-ass record, but with all this crap going on, she didn't want to release or do anything during this pandemic, and she said, how do you, because I didn't really want to put out that cover song at all anytime, and then she just basically said, look dude, I know how you feel about it, but she's like, I just think it's great, and I think in a sense she's like, I agree, I understand where you're coming from, but you did record it, and she's all, and it is pretty cool, I think it's great, and she said, you know, in a sense, what she's like, just throw it out there and see what it does. We're not going to promote it really other than socials. She's like, I'm not going to put any money into trying to get ads for it on radio or anything. We'll wait to do that when the time is right, when you guys have a final record. But in the meantime, she's like, I think you should just throw it out there. And she kind of just convinced me that it was a cool idea and to just let it be what it is. And that's kind of how it kind of came about.
Wow, that's awesome to have people behind you and getting the name out there and listening to your needs and so forth. Now, we kind of talked about a little earlier and all the bus accident in Spain. You had a bad injury, you fractured your C2. I'm just kind of curious, when that happened, how long did it take you before you were starting to get excited to like do more music and go back out on tour again? Were you just like immediately looking at that, or did you go through like some kind of depression where maybe it's like, I'm not sure if I want to go back to it anymore?
It was a lot of both of those things. My neck was so fused. I remember when, you know, I just thought I was never going to be like even close to normal, but I guess that's normal under those circumstances. I think a lot of physical therapy, just getting a little bit of mobility back. It literally was just like my neck was stuck because it was like screws and wires that fused my first and second vertebrae together along with some bone, and it was like locked. I remember when my first physical therapy, you know, the lady that was helping was asking me to move my, just in the even fraction of an inch, move my neck left to right, and I remember just moving my eyes left to right, and she's like, nope, that's just your eyes, like I was literally fearful. I felt like my neck was gonna snap if I could move it. It was so locked. Slowly that kind of went away, at least, you know, in the aspect of me being able to just stand up out of bed and blah blah blah, but it was kind of a boring, tedious couple of months, and I had a little like a Tascam kind of 4-track recorder, nothing like Pro Tools or anything, and I started showing, this was probably like maybe 3 or 4 months after my surgery, and I started showing the other guys, not even like demos, I would just say maybe 1 minute, like verse and chorus, two verses and a chorus kind of things, just like guitar and vocals, and I was showing these, oh, this is kind of what I have been doing, you guys, and they were surprised that it was coming, like they expected me to be kind of out for longer, and it after that it was like, okay, well, I think they were waiting for me to make kind of the first move, and then when they saw that I was even writing, they were all excited to just get it on themselves, and then we went from there, and that's, you know, I remember right around that time getting my first like a better computer and getting Pro Tools and just having that at my fingertips, and then we started
we started meeting with producers, which was awesome. I met some cool people. We actually had a meeting. We had some interesting meetings until we landed on, you know, the DeLeo brothers from Stone Temple Pilots. And that was just like we met with like Jerry Harrison from the Talking Heads, you know, and I was like, dude, this guy's in my house, like eating tacos that my mom made. And I was like, tripping out, but like, you know, this guy's like an iconic beast in my eyes. And literally he's a vegetarian. And I remember my mom made these tacos. He's all, dude, I haven't eaten meat in like so long, but I'm going to have like, he's all freaking eating my mom's meat. It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But I was salivating at the fact that we were having like, I guess with, you know, with a little bit of success, you start getting like these bigger fish swimming around. And that also made me think, well, is this just a money grab for somebody? And I don't think someone like Jerry Harrison was that dude, but we definitely had some meetings with some higher ups there that I was like, I don't think these guys really get it. And I don't think they really care what this record does. I think they want to just kind of, you know, take their 80 grand and go, or whatever they were going to get for that record.
Yeah.
So when meeting Robert and Dean and the fact that they kind of had already been through way with way more success than us, I'm not comparing us to them, but I felt like the similarities were leaps and bounds above just having like a producer who'd never really toured, never gone through like crazy stuff the way those guys had. Our stories are nothing compared to the tumultuous relationship that those guys had. But I think we really like hit it off in the first like two or three meetings that we were just like, we have to make a record with these guys.
It's awesome. Dryden, I want to thank you again for giving us some time here. It's been really cool talking to you and picking your brain a little bit. So what's on the horizon for Alien Ant Farm? What's on the horizon for you? And also, where can people go interact with you and check you out and see what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, we have an alienantfarm.com, but it seems like the .coms have, you know, kind of hit the dirt in the side of the road with stuff like Instagram. You know, I mean, our most traffic is going to be via Facebook and Instagram, even if I'm not on there. Like, that's just like the way of the world right now. So there's that, obviously. But our future is, you know, I'm really tripping out on this pandemic as far as what it means for live performance and stuff, because it is our livelihood, you know. And we're excited, we're writing like crazy, but that, I mean, I sit here all day and all night and press Apple Spacebar and just record riffs and stuff, but ultimately it's like we know that we have to be like moving and like traveling and
for
playing
sure.
shows,
especially kind of nowadays.
Yeah, so I'm just kind of worried and fearful that we might not see a true version of that for another year. And so I'm very fortunate to, even like I said, just getting that little bit of work, the more than just the money, because it's not crazy money. And I'm very blessed that I, you know, sold and bought this new home like literally months before all this went down, because I don't know what would have happened trying to sell that house right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so that doesn't speak for other dudes in the band or other people around me, but I feel really like lucky. And that this job that I have with this ink company has just given me like such peace of mind. And if anything, I was just going crazy in my own house, even writing music. And I love my kids are here. Everything's cool. I love it.
Yeah.
But I felt like there was like really no purpose after a little while, and like showing up and doing something like this with these people that are really cool has like kind of in a weird way breathed some life into my daily activities and made me even more productive musically. So I'm so stoked for that. And Megaforce is still there. Just like, you know, we have like talks, you know, once a week, once every other week, like we're just kind of seeing how this all kind of pans and plays out, you know.
Yeah it's kind of seems where a lot of people are at, and we're kind of waiting for the day for live entertainment to come back.
Absolutely.
Yep.
we want to work with a producer like in a room, and you know, we've had like some ideas. Oh, do you want to like Skype this producer right now? And I'm just like, not really. I just kind of want to get, I mean, if that's where it's gonna be, then fine, but I was like, I don't want to do that. I want to go and like, I want to get in the studio and start like making it, making music with
hear,
somebody.
Hear
you know?
Real sounds, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, no, so I, that's where we're at, and I'm happy. It's weird because with all this what if and what's going to happen, I'm like, you know, I've had a few cool little things happen in the last few months that have kind of brightened my days, and that's cool. I mean, it might sound selfish, but I'm just kind of trying to do what I can do, you know?
That's awesome. Well, Dryden, I could talk to you for hours. Maybe we'll have you on again down the line when, you know, maybe when this is all over and you guys are back out. We really appreciate the time, and stay safe out there.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I mean, no problem. It was comfortable. Sometimes I feel like it's like sticky or slow, or, you know, you feel like you got your feet in cement when you're talking to certain people, but you guys were, it was like perfect. I felt like I was talking to my wife.
Well, Verbal Shenanigans, we're like Alien Ant Farm's wife.
That's our new motto.
Well, you know what I meant.
Yeah,
my wife's real easy.
No comment. No. Dryden, thank you so much for your time, man.
Yeah, right on, guys. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Mitchell, everybody.
You think the reason why we're so easy to talk to is because we didn't bring up the Michael Jackson song 25 times?
Well,
I just got a feeling he probably gets, it's just like, oh God, you, one of you guys.
So what was it like when your song hit big? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you interview a comic and it's like, so how long have you been doing comedy? It's like, and listen, me and Mike are completely guilty of those stupid questions over the years, but I think we're getting better, Mike. I think we're getting better at good questions. So,
why it was a good interview? At no point I said the word fascinating. You hear the word fascinating from me.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to scroll through it, and I'm going to get an audio guy to help me out, like really go through every second of that interview and see if that's a true statement. All right, Dryden Mitchell, Mike. Dryden Mitchell. I think we should have some kind of bet, and then whoever loses has to get his hair cut from like the early videos with the line in the middle.
I think it would just work for me, and then you'd be mad that you lost your bet and I still look awesome.
So in your head, if you shave the line down the middle of your head, you just think that would work for you. You think that would be a good vibe you're giving off.
My look has multiple vibes to it, and it can adjust to the environment, and whatever haircut comes out, I feel I'll be rocking it, and the people will be giving me thumbs up, and you'll be sitting back pouting because your master plan backfired on you.
So let me just go over that statement. Your look has different vibes is how you started off that statement. Can you?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? Like you give off different vibes, like you're Mike the professional, Mike the goofball, Mike the, like, it just depends what you're.
Yeah. The eccentric, the sexy type. I have multiple layers.
Let's back up a second. What Mike the sexy type? How would you like put that vibe out there? What's really going to, you know, convince others?
Well, I think like a nice, like, suit jacket, if you will, like coming out, you know, crisp haircut, and all, maybe even going for a little risk, like a little line down the middle, and, you know, I'll be showing off you know, I've been working out a little, maybe have a take off the jacket, have some guns showing, and
hold on.
And it's like, well, this, you know, this is unique, but, you know, digging it.
Hold on. So your sexy look is a line down the head, in the middle of the head, a suit jacket, but when you take it off, you have sleeveless shirt on, so you have the gun.
Well, not sleeveless, like short sleeves, you know. I mean, I
just like
standards
a
here. I mean, I'm not gonna go like full on, like, you know, Southern type of intellectual looking. No, I'm gonna have something.
I just like the image of being in your head and you being like, yeah, this is a sexy look I'm putting out there right now. What about, like, I don't know, if you were feeling sophisticated. No, eccentric, you said. The eccentric Mike. What look would you go for there?
Well, I see multiple colors. Like,
every color in the rainbow. You know, maybe grow this out, maybe get like a little rat tail to my hair. I mean, the way things are going where I can't get the haircut, I'll get one eventually. You know, just different type of things. Maybe some, like, you know, some shorts on, some nice sandals.
Okay.
You know, something that gives, like, it's like, whoa, I don't know what I got here. But
maybe carry, you know, like, a feather pen around, something like that.
Ah, you know, maybe, like, those glasses that have, like, a second set of lens that have, like, very colorful, almost, like, steampunk look.
Huh. Is there any way we can get you to do one of these looks for our audience? Like, I mean,
you know, when things calm down and I can easily go to a store or search properly, yeah, maybe we can make something work out. You know, maybe I can get all these pictures and have like the Mike Berlew portfolio and like send it out. I mean, they do a lot of filming down here in Georgia. I mean,
okay.
It can get me some kind of roles, you know.
Every week you turn over another new stone and we hear more about what you think about yourself. It's unbelievable the positive view you have of yourself. It's unreal. Hey, like the God complex I think you have.
Well, I just sit back and say this is what I think of myself, and in my head I say to myself, this is what I know you know about me.
So. Like, do you sit outside on your front porch and just kind of look down? Like, I know you have that front porch. Like, look down on the rest of your neighbors. Like, you know, just feel important.
I don't. I stay humble when I'm sitting on my porch. I make the people who are walking by know that I appreciate them and I consider them equals.
Well, okay. All right, Mike. Well, you have fun with that, all right? You have fun with your different looks, and hopefully you'll report back to us. So.
Yeah, Eccentric Mike will let you know when he's here, okay?
Anything else before we go, Mike? Anything else here?
I'm just curious and all. Can you remember a time when, like, a best friend just, like, totally, like, dissed you or kind of, like, walked away where you're like, are you kidding me kind of moments?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well... I actually basically lost my best friend a couple of years ago because he married my ex-wife's sister.
Oh, I kind of remember that.
Yeah, so you throw that awkwardness in when I'm going through, you know, a divorce and whatnot. He's, like, chumming it up with his sister and, like, there at, like, family functions and, like, always just being... It just felt very forced and very like he was just trying to jump in the family. Like, he was almost using me as a springboard to, like, get involved with the family. And then, like, I don't know, dude, it's weird. We haven't really spoke in quite a while now. So that might be a relationship that's completely over. So I don't know.
Yet you went to his marriage. Interesting.
I did go. It was tough. But I did not invite him to mine. So.
Ooh. Damn, alone. Yeah. Knife in the gut there, kind
of. Well, it was more at the request of my wife, and we talked about it, and it kind of made sense. She didn't want to deal with people from the old, you know, people I used to be involved with at our wedding and whatnot, so I kind of get it, you know, but what are you going to do?
It would have been kind of awesome to see Alex in her nice dress and all going kung fu on your ex-best friend's wife.
Yeah, I'm just beating her down, blood all over the dress. You know, I can see
it. Yeah. I mean, they're trying to get Wedding Crashers 2 going out there. You could have made it before Farrell could have got a piece of it.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just that per se. It was just kind of the way he kind of vanished off the planet, and just, I don't know. It just wasn't a great situation. How about you?
I mean, the reason I asked you, I thought about a story that was kind of, it just popped in my head one day. I'm like, man, that's kind of weird. This is a long time ago. I had a...
So right after you were thinking about your looks, this story popped in your head?
Yeah. When gotcha. I'm like, I'm satisfied with my look, and then it's like, ooh, the past, what's coming up here?
Okay, now I get it.
Yeah, so I was kind of thinking back to like a summer. I was probably about like 14 years old. And we were, I was still living in South Brunswick at the time, and the next door neighbor, there was a guy lived there, and we were good friends and everything.
Right.
And one summer, my cousin from Georgia came down to visit. The whole family, his whole family came down. There was a really rough week because they stayed at our house in South Brunswick, which was, I think I talked about on the show before, we had 6 people, 3 bedrooms, and 1 bathroom to deal with.
Right.
So basically, like, 5 more people show up. I lost my bed. We didn't have spare pillows, so my pillow was a bunch of regular bath towels.
Okay.
And I was sleeping on the floor of my parents' room. But that's kind of beside the point. So my cousin's there, and my best friend immediately decides to become best friends with my cousin.
Okay.
And it's like I'll wake up and, you know, where's my cousin at? And I find out my best friend and him are at the bridge that was by our house fishing. Didn't invite me. It's like, okay. And run down and I meet up with them and do whatever and all. And then another day, it was like, I go to next door, knock on the door. Hey, as I forget his name. I want to say Billy. We'll go by Billy for the moment.
Right.
It's Billy in. He's like, oh, no, him and your cousin went. Billy's mom took him and your cousin out to, like, the mall or something like that.
Okay.
So, like, I had a literal week of my best friend basically just saying, screw you, your cousin's better than you. And then, like, my cousin went back, and then he's almost like, oh, I got nobody else, so come on back.
Ah, he pulled the old switcheroo on. Now, were you, like, offended enough at the time to keep him away after he came back? Like, to be like, no, man, you dissed me.
I don't know if I remember if I did. I mean, I think it didn't really hit me at first. Like, I think what kind of hurt more was, like, that story I told you about, like, him and the cousin went to, like, the mall or something. It was, like, a Saturday and had nothing to do. And I remember I went fishing with, like, his little brother, which is, like, 6 years younger than me. So it was
it's probably like, just like, you two relate more than we do.
Yeah, it was just, like, one of the weird moments where, like, I'm doing it. In the back of my head, I'm like, I don't want to be with you. I don't want to be doing this. And I want to be with my best friend. And, they were literally gone for, like, the entire day. It wasn't like, oh, quick trip and back in the afternoon. It was literally like nighttime, and my cousin's walking in. And it's like, hey, man, had a great time, and it just went to bed.
Oh, I'm sorry, pal. I just feel like we get to reveal, like, more layers of the Michael sad onion. Like, we just peel off little stories, like, of all these times you embarrassed and you were sad and you wore a toothbrush. Last week you told us about your spider, your spider costume.
Spider costume, yeah.
But it's okay. I mean, I'm going to ditch you too, so you might as well get used to that when Monday's episode comes out and there's like a new co-host, just like, what the hell? Like,
I'll join the Google Hangout and like, what's Joe Fernandez doing here?
Yeah, and like, you're going to listen to the interview and all your questions will be replaced with someone else's voice. Like,
it'd be funny if like, you just replace a different person with each set of the podcast just to rub it in. It's like, I did 4 hours of work just to prove to you you are out of this podcast.
This is how you know that wouldn't happen, because I would never put that many hours into this podcast. There's no there's no way that's happening. But, all right, Bruno, so we'll reveal more and more about our embarrassing, awkward childhood as we navigate through these waters. But it's time to go. Anything to promote before we get the hell out of here?
I'm going to promote a friend up in New Jersey. He is he's doing with a new group called the Jersey Interchange. They just did a release of the cover Somewhere in the Swamps of New Jersey. The band's name is Jersey Interchange. Give him a Google. Shout out to Al Bartone. He was a good friend back in Jersey. But go out and support him in his new group.
All right. And I'm just going to promote us, actually, just because we've had a lot of kind of traction on different things, and I feel like we haven't really announced some of our stuff. You can catch us on our podcast here on a lot of different platforms. Recently, Mike, what are we on? The RTF Sports Network?
RTF
Sports Network.
So that's what we could promote them to. But there's a couple other ones. I'll throw a few out there. We're on the BS Podcast Network. We've been with them for a couple of years now. They do a nice job with us. We're on Denville Radio. We're on comingrightup.org is some weird Japanese website now. So I don't know if we're on there. But if you know Japanese, let us know.
If you can great. We're like the greatest podcast in Japan right now.
Discovery County Network. Yeah. Yep. So we're on a lot of different places, and go check them out. They put out a lot of good internet radio content and downloadable content. So support your local artists and whatnot. And that's it, guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Bye.